This is going to be another episode of Snake and Banter here with me and Maui Snake. We are joined by Elish of Complexity, formerly Team Liquid, co-owner of Refrag, that thing that Pimp shills for when he gets finally fired off the analyst desk or whatever. That's actually a pretty cool thing to have some ownership in, though, Elish. I mean, it seems like everyone's getting into it now. Also, you did, I noticed, like, promote that right at the time your games went right back to the top. So everyone's like, wait a minute. Is it because, you know, our fans are like, with the sensitivity, is it because of the Refrag? Like, it's actually the best marketing campaign I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be a factor, right? I mean, as soon as all things going well and focus on Refrag, so make it work.
Yeah, you have to understand, guys, at the moment, the only reason Simple hasn't come back is he hasn't yet been able to negotiate some sort of a promotional deal with Refrag. And then when he does, he'll be able to come back and be the best player ever. So it's all right. So you have to understand, it's like the UFC. Business is, it's getting in the way of the game. The love of the game's gone. That's the problem. It's
play
just money
like
now.
Simple collabing with Refrag.
Yeah.
Rebirth. Well, the joke was what happens. Yeah.
I mean, the obvious joke there is, why is he giving that course? He can't play like Simple. Anyway, let's listen, it's all good. Okay. Listen, at least he wanted to flame Simple back in the day. He was just, you know, different personalities. Yeah, he just internalized it all and turned into becoming best NA player ever.
Yeah, I mean, we're just both passionate guys talking about the game.
Yes, exactly. By the way, I will say just a little detail, because I've told this story and it's like literally checks notes 8 years ago. I think the statute of limitations has passed. Because at the time, we won't say who, but you'll know who, your coach at the time, just let's say, was someone who actually wanted to curry favour with people like me and Richard. And all I'll tell you is he just actually like showed me a bunch of like those hidden unlisted VODs of your team playing and practicing. Yeah. And mate, all I'll ever tell people is that you can't even underestimate the stories. Yeah. They're so crazy. Like you wouldn't even believe this team could have been in major finals. It's bonkers, isn't it?
No, yeah, it was crazy. That's why I was like, dude, why is everyone like going out for me for? It was crazy. Like the screens were actually crazy. And
he was legit wilding out. It was wild. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it's not like it was one person's fault. Like, and even we watched it back, like, recently, like 2 or 3 years ago.
All right. We were all laughing.
It was really bad from, like, a lot of different angles. All right. But we can't even believe that it was. Well, we did know it was that bad.
Sure.
That's why we were kind of saying that.
Sure. Right, okay, that's enough banter. Let's get into the show. So, Elish, what is your good point for today?
My good point is that Mouse played really, really good on the stage. And I know it's been like kind of like a talking point that, you know, they're like group stage or, you know, studio merchants and all that. And at Cologne, they played super well. I think that they just needed a little bit more time. Even though they lost in the games, like, yeah, they did lose. But they looked really good, even when they lost, like, that really unfortunate USP eco round. I feel like they never, like, gave up, like, the fight. They, like, it's just one of those matches where, you know, both teams are, like, fighting for their lives, and they ended up losing it. But I thought overall, they didn't look any different than they did from, like, the group stage. And I felt like it's been a little bit stated a lot that they're only good, like, in studios. So I was happy to see them do well.
I really enjoy watching Mouse play. And for them to shed some of their stage fright demons here at Cologne is obviously a great sign for their future. Beating G2, I think, is a real big statement victory with how big this stage was. I mean, of course, they've beaten just about every top team in studios. They've even done pretty decent. They've, like, done okay here and there in, like, late stages of tournaments, like ESL Pro League, obviously, and whatnot. But, no, I think the reference victory for me has to be G2, because going into the playoffs, G2 was looking like the hardest shooting team of anybody at the entire tournament. And Mao's more or less just quelled all of the individuals, with the exception of Monacy, who's pretty hard to stop, honestly. So I'm pretty impressed with them. And I guess the hot take I have about Mouse is just that if there's really any team that can turn the corner on...
It's wrong, sure, doing, but keep going. I mean, have your own hot take then. Fuck it, just go for it. All right.
And just level up like 5%, 10%, and actually, like, I almost, in a weird way, is like the team that I think is actually closest to an era is actually Mouse, even though they haven't won a lot lately. I just think that the way that they're playing at 100%, I think that they play the best overall team Counter-Strike. Sure. I think every position makes a lot of sense, player for player. I feel like they have a really truly bred for the role IGL. And I just think that it's a team where they all see the winning pick, the winning condition much more than other teams, where sometimes I just see teams like, you know, G2 especially is a team where, like, sometimes round to round, you're just like, this guy, I mean, I feel like people have to play for themselves a lot more, whereas people on Mouse play more for the team. And so to see them do it on stage and hold their individual form was very, very nice.
Look, they have basically beaten every single team except FaZe, and it doesn't actually matter that much that FaZe is because they're not in the finals anymore. So it is true. They technically can beat everyone. But I feel like now I know, Elige, why he just slipped that bullshit hot take in there. Because, mate, can you imagine if he'd have said when Kassad was in the call, like, I think actually Mouse is the closest to having an hero and they haven't, like, won one studio ever. That would have been, like, a full, like, are you insane? Are you fucking kidding me? Maui, are you watching these games? Like, I could do the whole thing if I haven't got a fucking baseball card and a massive beard. So it's all good. It's all good. I agree, sort of. I will say this. I do think that it's slightly overblown in this sense. Because actually, funnily enough, I always do think this is the team that reminds me the most of the old TSM that became Astralis before they won. And they used to have a similar scenario. Because they could beat anyone in the normal tournament right after the Major or the Cologne. And it wasn't ever like people thought that they just lost every stage match. But when it was the match against like Na'Vi, they obviously could have won the tournament. When they were playing the team you had to beat to win the tournament, that's when they would lose. And the problem is, I think Mouse has the same thing. Like, obviously this one was about as close as you can get. I mean, I actually do think that Mirage one was brutal because they were going to be the first team to snack that streak. They were going to do it. They were on 11 rounds. Like, it was basically almost job done, but then as we say, like, touch wood, like, they didn't, and then they just blew it on like a totally stupid round. And even considering they started that match on Inferno so slow, you saw when they're on CT side, fucking hell is the skill on this team, mate. Like, that looks like this is why Knife Thief Na'Vi props for winning the game. To win out from T side of Inferno Mirage when you've just got four players that are like a brick wall just fragging you everywhere you go, that's like the nightmare fucking scrim where you just, no one wants to go first, and whoever goes in first is instantly fragged. You can't even trade him. Like, that looked really daunting. Like, when they get going, mate, they look fucking sick. You've played him, Elige. What do you think?
I feel like they're really good in the mid round when they all know that they have to do something. They're always super active, even when, you know, you can't figure out something completely perfect in a round where you don't have a flash. They'll just be like, okay, I'm going to throw like a smoke here and we're just going to run out as two or three just when they're unfocused or something like that. Like, I feel like everyone is on the same page of when they need to do something and they make it happen and they have the skill to back it up. So that's why it's really hard to play against them a lot of the time.
Yes. And I do think, by the way, if they ever do get to the level to win a Kalora Katowice Major, I'll tell you who the MVP is going to be. For me, it's obvious. It's going to be Exertion, mate. That guy is fucking bonkers. I can only imagine if he does this in real games, what he's like in scrims, mate. That, like, he's one of those demons on T-side. It's only because Donk exists. This guy doesn't get all his shine, in my opinion. Like, I think he's fucking crazy.
Yeah, I feel like Exertion, it's really nice, like, for his role that he has, like, so much freedom to do whatever he wants. Yes. Anything that he's feeling, he just goes for it. And he has that freedom within the team. And it's also because Jimfat is just so good, too. Like, having that rock that can just bring back around as a closer, or, like, on CT side, for example, you can just go for some crazy push. Or if you have a read, you just go for it. And you could still win the 4v5 pretty well because he can just get two or three on the defense.
Yeah. Right, come on then, Maui. What is your good point? Spoiler, everyone's been waiting. Drum roll. Go on, hit us with it. What is it?
I mean, there's other aspects to the new update that Valve came up with, but I feel like the good part of this is just that they made a firm stance on the snap tap aspect.
Yes.
And that's one where I feel like it's been weirdly contested in so many different ways. And I feel like, you know, different people are going to tune into the show, so I'll kind of reiterate.
Didn't you say you got the keyboard yourself? Didn't you get one of them and, like, test it out or something?
I got the Wooting right
okay.
next to me.
So yeah, you took them both, obviously. Comment on what it's actually like, because half the problem is the forums either think it does nothing or it's why Nico's really good now. It's like, bro, not Nico. You know what I mean? He existed for a long time before that. Come there, Barry. Hit us with it. What's the good reason why it's banned?
Well, so I feel like, okay, it's more of like the principle behind it. And I feel like there's been a lot of appeal to authority arguments, which I've kind of just sort of down. I feel like that's kind of the weakest way to play through this, which I've mostly been talking about, like, other pundits when they want to talk about this stuff. I'll just keep this, like, really simple and really straightforward and succinct, is that it does two things when you have SnapTap. It raises the skill ceiling to an inhuman level because you can have a millisecond perfect release of the opposite strafe key, and it raises the skill floor. I feel like people were doing, like, trying to say, oh, it's just one, it's just the other. It actually does both. And I feel like that's problematic also because we've all seen a hooksy missing a counter strafe, and then he misses the first bullet.
Well, his problem is he didn't have SnapTap back in the day. If he'd have had that, obviously he'd have looked like fucking Nico, wouldn't he?
Even at Cologne, you see some players occasionally, like, they'll miss that first shot. Like, it happens. And people did want to act like, oh, this won't affect pros at all. It's like, if you actually watch these games and POVs, the pros do mess up their first bullet from time to time. Sometimes they don't hit a perfect counter straight. And with SnapTap, you just wouldn't be missing that one. On top of that, I feel like the whole null bind discussion was something that was an obviously very slippery slope. Yeah, yeah. And I know that there's another aspect to this that I don't really, the jump throw stuff, maybe we'll get to that later.
By the way, once you made your point, even though this is the good, Elise can do later, we'll do the whole thing with the jump throw as well, but we'll do that after this part. We'll get it in, because everyone wants to hear it anyway. Go on, Mo, keep going.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like the thing is that it's good that they just made a very solid point on all of null binds and all of what hardware can do for you and not allowing something like this to happen. Because, I mean, I will just quote, it's not a straw man. This is what Chad said on Talking Counter, that it's a natural progression of technology. And I just, like, that kind of blew my mind as an argument point, because I just thought, like...
So is cheating, technically. Like, wall hack is, you know.
The natural progression of technology in League of Legends was that there was a monitor that used AI, that when there were skill shots that flew on the screen or whatever, it would then tell you where that came from off the screen. Like, it would put a red dot on your screen.
That's
and
sick.
It's like... And it's like, you know, you could even make the same argument. It's like, well, if they're professional players, they should already know where it is because it's a skill shot. Okay. So it's like that you have to be in that range of play. It's like, yeah, but that's holding your hand to do something which does need to be calculated on your own merit, which is what SnapTap doesn't like. It takes that away from you. It takes that skill away from you, just like that AI does the same thing. And I don't think that the natural progression of technology is a substantial argument, because there are simply just mechanics built into the game where you need to hone your abilities at it, and taking away something that's been a honed mechanic is just something that's dumbing the game down. And like I said, it raises the skill floor, it raises the skill ceiling to an inhuman level. And the comparison that I have is anybody with fighting game experience, like, it's like doing a combo for you. It's like, yes, every pro wants to do this multi-level combo, like, you know, quarter circle, AB, whatever it is, backwards or whatever. But every pro wants to do that. But sometimes they mess up. In a high-pressure moment, they mess up. But SnapTap doesn't allow you to mess up. And that's why I think it never should have been in the game.
Go for it, Elish.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. I think that they needed to, like, make some sort of, like, statement for it and have some type of detection for it, because not even just... I think the SnapTap thing, I agree. The biggest thing was the skill floor raising. I think that the skill ceiling, it does get raised, like, slightly, but, like, just...
Put it this way, you used it yourself. Points. You were on the dreaded list of where they make, like, the communists, like, oh, look at
just
this.
Just the last one.
Okay.
Just the last one.
Okay, but you were on that list. Here's the question. I never noticed you miss much, right? I guess it barely ever actually helped you that much, right? It was McKellie, like, 1 out of 30 times or something ridiculous, right?
Yeah, it's like, it feels slightly better. Like, you're not really... You're going to notice it a little bit, that you just feel a little bit more crisp overall. It's not going to be, like, the difference maker between, like the majority of your kills. It's not going to just make you 10% better as a player. It's probably going to make you 1% to 2% better on average, because you're just missing less strafes. When you're clearing angles, it just feels a little bit better. I think that it definitely helps probably the lower skilled players more as opposed to the pros. Like, yeah, it's definitely helping the pros, but raising the skill floor to a way higher level, I think, is what it does. But I thought the whole, like, discussion that, you know, you're just turning these players into absolute gods and Saw's going to completely fall off the face of the earth.
Yeah, exactly, because they all use it, I know.
Just relax, relax. It is not that crazy. They all know how to counter-strafe, guys, I swear to God. Saw was pretty good before, too. So I think that was just a little bit overblown. And I think the auto-stop binds after, that probably is what really, like, got them going even quicker. Because I don't know if you guys saw that, but it's like, you would have these auto-stop binds where you'd press, like, D, and they would just counter-strafe for you.
Oh,
like,
wow.
By default, which is just, that's actually just cheating.
Yeah, that's mental.
So it's that's why it's such a slippery slope, and they have to do something about it.
Right. I will say the one angle, and again, I'll have to refer it to the people who have the keyboard here. The one problem I see is this, though, which is because this isn't like a setting in the game, it's actually based on hardware. The problem I see is, like, essentially, Valve's going to have to keep checking what the latest hardware is and how to detect if people are using it. Because isn't this like a virus, antivirus developer cycle thing where once you get one ahead, someone, because essentially the joke of this is, it's only the SnapTap feature, which, by the way, shout out to Razer. They've done great marketing. Their shit's been going crazy. The Wilting keyboard was there the whole time and could do things almost similar to this the whole time. It's just that everyone's like, shh, I'm doing this thing with the SOCD. Like that. So in a way, I do worry that this is going to become something that someone will try and get it through another loophole, it'll be in the tech again. What do you think, Elish?
Well, it's Wu Tang didn't have it the entire time. They added Sock D is what they called it, but they added Snap Tap like a couple of days after
Right.
the Razor thing came out, and then slightly before that, like a week or something, they had it Rappy Snappy, which
Okay.
worked similarly, where it like kind of detected which key was further down. So it wasn't exactly the same. And if you
Right.
saw like the asterisk on the list of like me, for example, at the Blast Fall Finals and Twists. That's why there was an asterisk, because we were using the Rappy Snappy and not the
Ah,
Snap Tap.
right.
It's hard keeping track of
Yeah,
all the
yeah.
names, so
The
it's
names
kind of
are a
funny.
nightmare. It's true. They have just tried to do that. It's like every version of those fake KFCs in other countries, where it's like, what do you mean? It's Tennessee fried chicken. You're like, shut the fuck up. King fried chicken.
The thing is that I think needs to be the difference though, if people are like not keeping up between the differences, it was like first Rapid Trigger, then Rappy Snappy, then it was Snap Tap. The difference that finally like they broke a threshold with Snap Tap versus the other ones is that both Rapid Trigger and Rappy Snappy were based off of you doing all of the actions that then like was what carried movement through to your character.
Right.
But Snap Tap was where it actually is you just press something and it basically just auto fixes your movement. That's where it was the breaking point for me at least, because then it just actually mimics null binds, which is something that years ago I remember when I was playing CS Source, there was an ESCA forum where people were using aliases to make it so you could hold W or hold WA, WD, and then all you had to do was press S and it would cancel all of your movement
Right.
instantaneously. And that's where I felt like ESCA admins, I think this was like 2007 or something like that, they made this statement that was like, we will not allow null binds for movement because, and I don't think, actually, it might have been all null binds, but I know at least it was that sort of thing, which basically is what Snap Tap did. Like with Snap Tap and SOCD, you could actually, well, I did this. I made my W actually and my S key cancel each other also so that I could have forward momentum and cancel that, or backwards momentum and cancel that with the other key. And it actually does help for your forward and backwards, which is, it's not as useful. Like I don't know if usefulness is like needs to be characterized in this whole argument, but it was something that it did help, and that was also a problem with the game too, or with the feature.
Yeah, I don't think that like you would just be able to start, like going straight and be able to instantly S tap when somebody swings you and you'd be able to kill that guy. It's like, no, you're probably still dead like
Right.
99,000 times out of, however many.
Yes.
And I think that it's just where the key is just doing something for you. I agree with you. That's where you like draw the line. It's like if it's automatically inputting something, then that's where it's too much. And I do think that Valve is going to have to like keep on top of this. Not necessarily Valve, but Blast, ESL. I think that they should always like keep on top of like all of the hardware that's being used, because even the Valve stuff, like that command where they're like detecting the inputs, that's only on like the official Valve
Yes.
servers from what I understand right now. And yeah, I mean, it's going to be prone to false positives, and they have the technology to check this stuff anyway with that GitHub thing that, the guy that's checking all of the ticks anyway. So they could do that themselves, and it's just going to always be a battle. It's so much like cheating type of stuff.
I also do think I'm actually not sure. Obviously, I don't know the context of Chad saying that. I think he's kind of wilding on that take. Like, the reason why is because one, he's making it sound like it's good because it brings everyone up to a higher level. It just brings everyone closer together. It's not like then, like, once he gets to go high, there's a cap. You can only do perfect Counter-Strafe. As soon as everyone does close to perfect, there's nowhere for Monacy to go. And then also, for the fans on the forum who thought you'd cracked the code of why Nico is good again, the reason why that is a mental take is think about his Deagle. He probably had the best Counter-Strafe of all time. That's why his Deagle is so insane, you idiots. Because he's never ever moving while he does it. It just looks like he does because he perfectly stops on a dime. So why would you want anything that allows someone else to mimic what he does? Isn't one of the coolest things about CS? They've watered it down a bit, but how people move and the fact that like you could turn the nameplates off, we could do one of those segments that the betting companies do, and at least would know immediately who Nico is and who Twists is and who fucking Monacy is. Like you can actually see by the way they move in the surface. So you don't want to make any of that stuff closer. Now, even though this is actually still the good section. Okay, go on.
All right, well, yeah, one last thing about kind of like other people's angles, like, because they've talked about it on HLTV Confirmed. I've seen other people talk about it, where another big argument like for SnapTap was just simply the argument that, well, we've opened Pandora's box and now we can't close it.
No,
And it's
Valve
like,
can absolutely close it. They can ban you and everything.
yeah,
Yeah, it's all
they
good. Yeah,
literally
sure.
closed it.
Yeah.
They literally
So,
closed it, but now they
by
can
the
just have
way, in
it.
that analogy, even if you know what Pandora's box was, once she opened it, all the evil and chaos of the world came out. But if you could have closed that, that would have been brilliant. If you could put everyone back in. That would have been ideal. You've got your whole metaphor wrong there, HL TV Comp. Yeah. Listen, stay out of antiquity. It's not your thing. Maybe, I don't know, maybe do like Harry Potter or something like that. You know what I mean? Get in your lane. It's all good.
I just feel like a lot of arguments were presented about this with just the argument from authority, like appeal to authority fallacy, where it was just like, if Valve's not doing anything, then it's okay. And it's like,
okay,
well, we're not even trying to break down the premise of what's actually happening here and why it's actually bad. But I'm just glad at this point that it happened, and I presented arguments before even Valve did it about why it's bad with the null bind, like that kind of logic. And yeah, okay, we can get to the whole like jump throw stuff.
Right, the thing about the jump throw thing is this. This just shows, Elise is old enough to know this as well. This just shows how there really is nothing new under the sun, Elise, because I'm pretty sure we had this discussion in 2015 when everyone was doing the smoke thing and people like Carrigan were like, I think you should have it. And then you had like one or two boomer players, I don't know, maybe some of Virtus Pro was like, I think it's a skill thing because like Neo had practiced a million hours.
Olaf.
We've done this exact convo before, guys. So you already did some tweets where you basically said, like, to you, this is essentially like a nonsense removal. Like, to you, it's just you hit one button instead of two. It doesn't remove all the scale, blah, blah, blah. So give me your take on it. Why were you against this one? It sounds like you didn't want the jump throw removed, right?
Yeah, I mean, people are acting as if this is like some crazy display of skill. Okay, so first of all, it's not some crazy display of skill, because not only is it very easy to just do two keys instead of one, but Valve is literally making it easy on purpose for us. They want it to be easy to do a jump bind. So if you're saying that there's like this 200 millisecond window for it to be perfect, then okay, then yeah, it's not a big deal. Valve wants everyone to be able to jump throw perfectly. So let's just have a bind. Why are we removing it then? If Valve wants everyone to be able to jump throw, why don't we just have a bind, or why don't we just allow it? So that's like my first point, is like, why not just allow it? So I mean, you could go from there, I guess, what you think of that.
Well, I think with jump throws, they're basically laying down the law with the whole snap tap discussion and saying, we're not allowing null binds. We're not allowing a single key to do two actions at the same time. However, I actually feel like that's the jump throw is at this point sort of like a quality of life bind. Yep. I don't actually see it in the same capacity as snap tap, which is, yes, like, I've done, you know, yesterday after the whole snap tap stuff, I started doing all my jump throws and stuff like that just to see. And I can hit them with like really, really high accuracy, almost never messing up. If I mess up, I know I'm messing up, but it's just that in a high pressure moment, you know, you're like getting mollied at banana, you need to throw the good smoke to smoke off CT boost or whatever. You don't want to have to think about like W spacebar, let go of click at the same time. And you just want to throw the right smoke that you have there. And I even though I am against null binds, I actually think that this is a feature that is now so integral to high level play at Counter-Strike. And really, fans could do it too. Like, fans throw their jump throws, low level people, they throw jump throws too. They throw running jump throws as well, or like W jump throws. I just think that it would actually be in Valve's best interest now to create their own sort of macro / null bind for W jump throws and just put that in the game. Like, I don't see any reason against that, actually. If they want to make it, if they want to put it there, I'm not going to die on a hill that I died on for snap tap.
Yeah, I mean, they already had it in the game. That's the thing. Like, when CS2 was in the beta, it was in the options, and Flom said that as well. So it's something that they want, and I've talked to them about it before, and they pretty much just want it to be easy where you don't have to have a bind. But yeah, back to the quality of life thing, it's just much cleaner, like, to play. Like, it just feels nicer when you have to do, like, you know, a very precise lineup while you're going on the run, or if you're doing, like, a running middle click throw. It just feels much better to throw it, besides, like, the clunkiness. And from the point of, like, this is, like, some skill thing, it really isn't. Like, I think that it's very easy to do, and yeah, I mean, I also was, you know, practicing my nades. Sorry, I didn't post it on Twitter, so no one can like give me props and be like, oh, he's practicing his nades, guys. See, look at him. He saw the update. Yeah, I saw it, guys. Like, I can do it, I swear. I don't know. I didn't feel like I had to post a video to show that, but I don't think that it's like a crazy display of skill. It's very easy. It just feels worse when you have to do the ones that are like more running based or middle click based. And my other point with it too is like, I don't think that the fans want to see games where people are missing smokes. Like, that's, it's not fun to watch. Like, do you want to see people like just playing bad CS. There's smokes missing, flashes are wrong. Like, we miss people miss enough nades already, and you know it's sad when you see people miss nades right now. But just, you know, like you said, high pressure stuff. Someone misses a nade. It's like that's not something fun to watch. Like, imagine in Cologne, like if in that grand final, people are just like missing nades left and right. You're like, oh, that was a shit final.
Sure,
it's not fun to watch.
No, I'm with you. To me, the distinction here is, first of all, there is actually way more skill, as I alluded to, in counter-strafing. I just told you examples of some of the best players ever at counter-strafing and how it sets them apart, and it even makes like a deagle better than it should be normally. Then also, there's the factor that, because, like you'll say, like, put it this way, the part people are forgetting is this. You're not taking a fight while you do the jump throw. We're not taking like processing power out of your brain. You're doing it in fucking spawn half the time or in the other site.
Yep.
So all you're doing there, like you say, is you're just potentially ruining the end of a round. Imagine a round where there's like 2 versus 3 and then it's on like, I don't know, fucking just 2 A site, and the two people who are T's are long and they throw the smoke. This isn't even one that would work in that sense. I don't know, but they throw smoke for catwalk or something, right? And it slightly misses because they fuck up without the jump bind, right? And it goes a little bit off, and then when they run up, you're ready for the big tension. Will they get and they just get killed through the gap and the smoke and it's dead? It's like that, or they see they peek, see, and go, oh, better save, we can't get over. It's like, what a fucking shit round that is. Like, and
yeah,
we already had this discussion 10 years ago. It's one of the only things, even though this is an appeal to authority, I will say, I've heard almost no pro say, please keep snap tapping, here's a good reason. Like Mal, we said, I've never heard a good reason for it. The all reasons that it's less negative or something, yeah, it makes everything a bit better. Like, whereas for the jump throw one, there was one or two people, like you say, back in the day. And by the way, as alluded to, they were ridiculous. It was like the people who played the really default Swedish CS, magically they were like, I think you should take it out. And then all the Danes who were like tactical, like, no, it has to be in the game. We need it in the game. And it's like, you're just fucking trying to make it easier for yourself, you little rats. You just don't want him to do that smoke. Nowadays, we've done 10 years of doing this. Valve clearly want it in the game. And then also, let's be real. Here's the skill of a smoke. The lineup, the timing, the preparation to know if it fucking works. Like, all of that taken away because the guy is a bit of sweat made him finger slip on the key. Oh, that's so anticlimactic. Yeah. Who wants that?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I think people just are on like their high horse, acting as if this is like some crazy thing.
Yes.
And I just don't agree with that at all. I think it's completely silly. And I think that people want, now they're going with like, CS should be like super vanilla. We shouldn't have all these crazy binds.
I
actually like completely disagree with people saying that stuff, because half, I'd say like in the last like 6 updates where we've had new settings added to the game, half of it's just stuff that I had in my config like 3 or 4 years ago of just like bind toggles,
right.
Like the radar bind, for example,
right.
Just going closer, close out.
Yeah.
You have the big crosshair bind. Like, this is stuff that's just quality of life. That's just nicer for everyone. Like, are you going to argue that the big crosshair bind is easier for people to like line up? Like, I didn't see anyone say that when the big crosshair thing came out. It's like, no, it's just nicer for everyone. It just feels better.
I will say, people pick all the wrong things to get mad about too. Like, they get mad on this as though they've caught everyone hacking. Meanwhile, like, the actual one everyone should have lost their mind on was that one years ago when Eco and Glaive, when Eco wasn't aware that you could see that like thing like on the fucking radar if you're like through the smoke. That's like some legit shit. If I've just lost a bunch of games to you and you were doing that, maybe then I get mad. Like, this is just some shit where it's like, also, I'm just going to say this. I think noobs just want like some of this stuff to be in the game so they feel more pro. I'm just going to put that out there. You can't do what Eco does. You want the keyboard to do it for you. Like, oh, that's it's raising the skill floor. Yeah, your skill floor. Shut the fuck up. Get out. Anyway,
I mean,
go on.
Most of the people on like the Reddit thread that's like, we are going back to OG roots and stuff like that. It's like,
yeah,
you guys aren't.
You
guys aren't throwing these hard smokes every day.
I know
for a fact you're not. So that's why you're like, bring everybody back down to my level because I never practiced these smokes to begin with. It's like, we don't want that Counter-Strike anymore.
Right. My good point is another. It's another Cologne topic, which is, look, actually within it, if you can infer what the negative side of this would be, it's the good point, so we're just going to stick to the good, which is, if you watched Vitality's T-side, holy fuck are their openers and their entries good, mate. It is mental. Like, I saw people like Flames and Sphinx, etc., hit like those pixel perfect AK shots onto like the AWPer ticket and stuff when they're running out of Mirage. Like, I don't think people understand. Maybe he's just played against him, so I hope he's going to give me his thoughts on this. Like, that's an example of a game where everyone was flaming the fuck out wonderful the whole game. I want to go, bro. He's not fucking Monacy. Do you know what it's like playing against like 2 or 3 rifles? Both coming out on that fucking round. Look, he can kill the first guy. Everyone could do that in a pog. That second guy, mate, when you're re-scoping, that's a nightmare right there. So I thought that aspect of Vitality's game, that's the reason why I think they deserve to lift the trophy, mate. The amount of times they got the bomb site. Like, they could even, like, on Inferno, just go B. On Dust 2, just go B. On Mirage, just go A. Right? There is no just go to that site. Like, in Pro CS, you get eaten alive if you keep doing that. They have to stack everything. They could actually just go, they could contact onto these sites and kill people. Like, I thought that was some of the most fucking insane T-side CS I've seen at the beginning of the round. Like, they actually, for real, there's a world, actually, where if Na'Vi didn't pull off those hero late rounds, I could have seen Vitality just blasting the series open and fucking, like, 2-1 in them, 3-1 in them. They could have smashed some of these games. So I thought that was, in a game where everyone complains about, like, everyone's waiting for the smokes and, oh, they're going to go on this timing. Like, I thought it was just some fucking amazing CS.
Yeah, I think that Vitality was looking so good, especially on Inferno, like you said. I remember when I was watching it, I instantly wrote in chat, I'm like, guys, we got to study this T-side. Like, we got to make our banana looking like that. And I'm the banana guy, by the way, so that's criticism for myself. Because they were just insane. And I think that they just have this crazy brawl style, at least on, like, banana. When they were playing, just, like, everybody's just, if I have the spawn, I'm going in. Like, they have three people just chucking nades, just trading everything, double nades, they're just swinging through the smoke as two guys, just banging them out. Apex is going crazy. Like, I think that it's very hard to play against. And
dude, half the time, no joke, the Na'Vi players, you could only see them because you have the X-ray on. They never would fucking peek in the corner ever because they knew they'd just toast if they peek that.
Yeah, for sure. It's scary. Like, these guys are, like, some of the best individual talented players that we have. Like, those riflers, Spinks, Flames, Zaiwu, because, you know, he's pretty much a rifler on T-side, Mezzi, like, they're all really good. Mezzi was a superstar when he was, like, playing on Fnatic. He was crazy good. So they have so many talented players. Apex is even playing really, really good in, like, two of those maps. He was fragging out hard. They make it hard for you. And, you know, for the shots on Wonderful, when people are saying, like, he's missing all these easy shots, honestly, there's a lot of micro to make, like, an opper miss a shot. Like, I think that there's a lot more that you can see from it. It's not that he's just missing an easy shot. I mean, yeah, sometimes you would, like, obviously everyone misses, but it's not that just simple. It's like, wow, like, yeah, you could have hit that. Yeah, maybe you could have, but they don't make it easy for you on purpose.
Yeah, I even think one thing that will always be misunderstood by the pro is there's a counterintuitive part about peaking as a pro, where sometimes you do that thing where you even just stop and stand still because they expect you to do the trajectory and the AWPer pulls it out so that when you run and jump, he shoots that way. Like, stuff that would, like, in a noob game, you would just get fragged if you did that. But that actually makes the best players miss. That's the sort of mind games you're playing. And then the worst thing is when you're the AWPer and you have the one shot and the guy does that, you look like a complete dickhead. So, and by the way, I always say this, the observer's always on you when that's happening. So you just look like an utter clown. You're always like, can't it be on the other guy at the other site? But it never is. It's always on you when you whiff like that. It just is. Come on, Maui.
Right. I mean, to make Wonderful miss, yeah, like Alige said, I mean, as soon as you mentioned the micro, I wouldn't even think of Vitality, but, like, even people like Torzy just throw out all these crazy little movement tactics. Like, when he came out ramp one time to peek Wonderful, who was at Tollbooth, it's like you do this thing where you, like, you strafe out of ramp, you're side strafing right, and you show, like, the tip of your head, then you crouch to show your elbow, and then you uncrouch to show, like, the top of your head again. And then at that point, you're already pre-aimed on him at Tollbooth. And, like, you have to throw out all those little tricks because, like, I mean, I think Donk really showed a lot of people pretty early on that, like, you just need to throw out all these crazy little crouch spams and know when to, like, slide in certain ways and how to take certain duels. And now everybody's just leveled up their own rifling peeking game just so that you can actually take entries without always throwing a lot of utility. Not that Vitality weren't throwing good flashes, good utility to take bomb sites, but they do a lot of really just like you watch these players play, and if you don't have, like, a really trained eye on their POV, you might be like, oh, he just swung and killed him. But it's like, no, it's like the little crouch, like the little stutter step, the little, like, unpeak. Like, there's so many little things you have to do. And actually, I think the game would be interesting in some ways if you could rewatch a game and just see the keys that they're pressing flash on your screen to see all the APM that's actually going into
like
all
these Dota.
Yeah, you can do that in MOBAs. They often put it where you can see the keys pressing for the spell. I would actually be sick. By the way, for specifically people like the Donks and the Nikos, I want to see how they peak. Yeah, that'd be awesome. Also, when the noob thinks that's an easy shot he missed, here's the difference. When you miss that shot, the other guy isn't fucking flames. He doesn't just instant bang your head off the pre-aim, does he? He sprays and then comes out. Like, you have the reload. This guy has one shot and he's aware of that, by the way. In his brain, he's like, I can see two people coming. I have one bullet. I'm probably dead anyway. The pressure's insane. He's in the fucking Cologne Grand Final, guys. Like, he's not just playing in his bedroom with the Coke Zero or whatever that Nico meme is, that with fucking insane cultural impact. So, okay. Right. Let's go on then, Elish. I mean, you could obviously have already done the jump throwing, but what is your bad point for this one? It's a good one. What is your bad point?
Well, my bad point, so I was going to go more of just like the only NACS route here, but I'm just going to go for like the whole world. So for me,
okay.
It was
covering your bases.
Significant changes. Yeah, unless something big changes, CS will be a one region game by the end of next year. So not only just NA, but also like the Asia region, Oceania. Like, I think that it's going that direction, and I'm not saying that's, well, actually, okay, I do think it's bad. I think it's bad just from like a perspective of how much growth potential that we have, how many more players that we potentially can like reach. You know, if you look at Valorant side of it, I'm not going to completely like be enamored by their whole pro scene because they have their own problems with their circuits and stuff, but at least they're a very global game.
Oh, every region's good in that game. Every region, yeah.
Exactly.
I mean,
yeah,
Africa,
like, that would be amazing.
Everyone else, yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing for us, and at least if we could at least make it two regions, I think that would be great. But I feel like everything's kind of just being siphoned into EU. And obviously, I'm going to be doing like whatever is like best for me and what's best for like the team.
Yeah.
So we're going to obviously like change for that. But I think that not only is it kind of like the TO's problems, which is kind of something that you've said before, like on your shows where, you know, stuff that you try to do with like Flashpoint, trying to make sure like NA is going to have like a big thing. But now that we only have everything towards EU and also the stuff with the RMR points, how they work, if you don't have a bunch of tournaments going on domestically so everyone can gain ELO, then the only way you can gain ELO is by going to the EU tournaments.
If people don't know, this is something we talked about on a Four Horsemen episode with obviously Messi also from your team. If people don't know, the actual bit, this is a way you know that people only get mad about what they're told to get mad about. The craziest change, guys, is they're going to have this ELO system within the fucking matches potentially in the future. So essentially, if you think about it, it won't be where, like, you know, for the medium event, I attend this small one because I'm regional to them. I'm going to win. If you go to that event and you're called, you go to an NA event, you can't lose to anyone or it's not worth going to the event. You're just wrecked. And at the event, the only way anyone can get to a bigger status if they went to the same event is to beat call. That's it. They can't ever get the ELO otherwise. So all that will happen is, even though we'll have loads of tournaments, every top team will try and go to the same tournament. And actually, sometimes they're actually incentivized to miss a tournament that would, like we're saying, build up the regional stuff. Because obviously you want it to be where, if there was a real Swedish team, they'd play at a Swedish land so then up and comers can play them. You would play it like some NA land so then the MAT team would have a chance to beat you on home. So that might actually go away. So that alone also will make it, because Europe is going to be the best tournaments, it'll just be the only place to play, right?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit lame. Even right now, it's affecting teams like right now. For example, M80 couldn't play in the NA Revival Cup that Complexity was hosting like a week or two ago, whatever it was. They couldn't play in it because if they potentially lost to anybody, I don't even know if it's map-based, but if they lost to anybody, they could have potentially not made like the RMR qualifier or something crazy like that. And it's just, or they would have like lost like their seeding, for example. Yeah. So it's just disincentivizing us or like anyone that's like at the top of their region to play domestically, which just further, you know, makes the scene get worse. It's kind of like in real life. If you have like a town and like less things like are happening there, then more people want to move out. And it's just like a slow death of a town. And I think that's really negative. And I think that it's bad for all the reasons that I said. I think that just not having that growth potential, you're missing out on markets, you have less players. I think there's just a load of reasons why it's bad.
I've brought this up back when it was, I know that there's like, I guess there's this kind of like ELO system that they're going to use in the future, potentially, or is that, how confirmed has that been? I'm just curious.
I mean, Messi also seemed to think it was a thing. So, I mean, he usually knows the rules. He reads all that shit. He used to be an admin.
Right. So I mean, I brought up before the fact that it felt like you kind of had to, it's almost like you have to be in Brazil, which weirdly has a lot of cash prizes, or you have to be in Europe. It's kind of like,
Brazil can work because they have enough good teams that you can also beat Payne and the other ones. I think that was the only other like exception that worked, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Practically speaking, that's all you can do, because if you're the Mongols, why would you want to play in the Oceania region right now?
That would literally, they would never play their local team ever.
Even prize money wise, back or when it was on the, you know, you have to win a certain amount of prize money, and that was how you got regional, like RMR points essentially. You pretty much just had to go to Europe, or you could just play in Brazil, as weird as that is. But yes. I feel like the Asia scene seems like it's going to have a really long way to go, no matter what happens. But I do think that the slow downfall of North America, which is kind of like, I'd say sort of stagnated, is really where, to me, I mean, I can say this obviously because I live in North America, but I mean, it just kind of sucks that for all the tier two teams that want to practice against Complexity and Liquid, you guys are in Europe all the time, because you should be. You should be in Europe all the time.
That's a big shoot, yeah.
Yep. And so for people that are trying to come up in the tier two space, like I've talked to recently Semphis on like nouns and everything, and he's just talking about like, you know, there's only so many teams you can really play here, and most of the time you can't even get practice, and then it just looks so bad because, you know, that one opportunity that nouns gets when they go to Europe, it's like they couldn't get a nuke scrim for the previous 2 weeks going there, and they know that everybody's going to want to pick it against them. So yeah, it's just like so many ways that this just kind of takes out the legs underneath any sort of burgeoning region or region that's really just kind of on life support right now, which is the Americas in general, or at least North America, that is. So no, it's just all in all bad. And I feel like the lack of incentives for being in North America right now just make it feel like it's moribund. Like, it's not, I don't know how long it's going to even last at this point.
All right, Elise already preempted this. I won't do the whole like, you all deserve to die. I'm Freddy Krueger, and you ruined my flashpoint. Ha ha! I will kill your dreams and all your young players. Ha ha! I won't do it. Obviously, like, fuck you, it's too late, isn't it? It's all over, so don't worry about that. But I've got 2 points that relate to Malbs. One is Malbs just proved why this is terrible. Because do you know the way in every regional scene you get into a better team? You just beat them. You play them and you beat them, and they go, wait a minute, he's really good. One, if we sign him, he'd be good for us. And two, then they wouldn't be as good and beat us. That's the most old school way ever to get in a team. It doesn't matter how much shit you talked, how much they hate you. By the way, this is literally how Simple got in Na'Vi. Before that major, Na'Vi used to even derisively, if you asked them, laugh and go, we'll never recruit Simple. We don't need him. We beat him every time. And then after that game, I asked them, and then Starix went, well, we will see. And then they recruited him like 2 weeks later or something ridiculous. Like, because after they lost, they were like, actually, wait a minute, why don't we just fucking have him on our team? And then the other Malbs angle is this. Here's also why NA is going to be worse. You just let Malbs go. He was sat there the whole time. Little Guatemalan boy, quiet. Apparently just keeping, drinking all the tea, find out who's fucking who and keeping notes. I'll be the Punisher and get revenge for this. whatever the fuck that angle is, okay. Fucking drama. I thought he was just a chill guy. And then you just let him go to G2, where, by the way, they already had all the fucking aimers. So, okay, listen, Team Liquid, all I'm saying is he was right in your backyard over there. What are you doing? You're out there fucking digging away in the mountains for Polish harpers. Anyone in here? Is there anyone in here? Marvis is just back there the whole time. Like, can I play it? Shut the fuck up. So, no, there's one problem. Two is actually Elige nailed it. Is the reason why this is negative is actually Valorant proves that you could have a more global scene within CS, because that game only came out a few years ago. But I won't do the whole spiel, but I'll do a very quick example because I've lived in Korea and I have been to China many times. If you ever go there, what you need to know is how the kid who plays the game discovers the game. It's simple. They don't have computers. They don't buy the game. They don't use Steam. What they do is they go to a PC cafe. Think of it in the West like an arcade. You don't go to the arcade and go, hey arcade guy, can you get a Tekken 2 in here so I can play? You just play what's there. Whatever's there, you play that game. So if it's Street Fighter, whatever games they have now, I'd keep listing things from the 90s, like Time Crisis, and seem really old, right? Basically all the new games that you all love. Fortnite there, who knows? Maybe there's like a one with the thing. There should be that. There should be one at that. And you press
there's
a button.
A lot of dancing games.
There you go. Dance Revolution. There we go. Probably 10 or something. Who the fuck knows? I was only playing one. Right. But the point is, that's what it's like. You go, and what you pay for there isn't the game. You pay for the time in the cafe. So what you do is you pay for an hour. It's like a dollar, right? When you pay for the hour, you just go to the PC. You and your friends just click on one of the icons and start playing that game. That's why, by the way, they had a game. It was called like fucking, I forget, even Crossfire. That was a shit version of CS, because it was preloaded, because the Koreans have the same publishing model. Everyone that in Asia played Crossfire, or in the early days of CSGO, they played a game called Counter-Strike Online, which was 1.6, modded to be like this for free. And so the worst thing is, if you actually basically didn't have the model that we have now, we have to get Steam and you used to have to buy the game. If you just made it like they did with games like Valorant, I actually think there's a world where you could have people play in those regions. Because if you don't know, all the skilled players there don't play CS. Like all those guys from Overwatch who were the stud DPS players, they're all in Valorant now. That's where they all went. And that's why in Valorant, if you don't know, guys, they not only had a Korean team won the last massive tournament, they have a Chinese team that's fucking bonkers. Think about when we had Ty Lue, we were like, they might get a map here. And with the Koreans, we were like, oh my God, they got 14 rounds on a map. Like these guys are just beating the best players. And it's not just them. They have like the Latin American teams and the South American teams. They have fucking everything. It's crazy. So I always think, imagine if we could have that in CS. Because basically, whoever you think sick, this texture guy on Gen G and Valor, imagine if he was playing CS. Imagine if he was coming in like Malbs now to play against Nico and Donk and Monacy. That would be so fucking dope. And then lastly, yeah. I'll just say this. We have speculated about this many, many times, at least, but this is the perfect time. As you say, disclaimer, you live in NA, you play for an NA team, you have always played for an NA team. You have an obvious reason to want to be able to stay in NA. I've always said, one thing about CS I'll never blame a player for, it's a bit like the Case Rata one, is since in CS, unlike League of Legends, you don't have to live in a team house and be there most of the year and experience all the highs and the lows and be away from your family, you can go, even like this is why I thought people like Device kept going even when they had the illness. They could go and win the tournament, go home to Denmark, see their family, their mom, their friends, chill out for 3 days when their day's off, then get back to practice, and it would refresh them. It would allow them to sort of like not burn out, even though they'll play way more and travel way more. I actually think it burns you out, that system. So obviously, people always do this with you, Elise. They just go, he should join FaZe or Na'Vi or maybe he could be in G2. What about Vitality? It's like, we have to know if he wants to go to Europe first. Like, are you someone where, given a choice, you want to stay in NA and you want to live where you live in NA and you want to just play as a professional, right?
Well, yeah, that's kind of why I made this my point, because I feel like it's not even going to be a choice anymore.
Right.
Because, you know, obviously I want to be like the best player in the world, but at a certain point, if I'm spending all my time like in EU anyway, then yeah. I feel like I might as well just be there. So if there's not going to be like any reason, if I'm going to have to be here for like boot camps, like I am for now, exactly, I've been on the road for like 6 weeks now. Like if I'm not even being home, then I feel like then I would just go to Europe, right? Like that's yeah. like the obvious conclusion of like next year. Why wouldn't I just go to Europe
sure.
and we just have like the whole team in Europe? And then that's obviously why it's going to cascade and be like, okay, well, now that's minus one team that's in NA that could ever be there for practice. Not that we're not even there that much, but that's minus one permanently gone. That's never there for practice. And then there's another team. Then there's another team gone. And then it just gets worse and worse from then that point onward. And me personally, I would like to, you know, live in NA if I could, if there was like optimal things, if there was enough tournaments that could keep all like the good teams that are actually NA, like the teams that are like playing there.
Okay.
And we had maybe Brazilian teams, for example, like how we used to have back in the day. If there was more of like an incentive and good practice, then I would like to, because like you said, we never had an issue with this back in like 2019, 18, 17. Yep. We could go on their own for like 4 weeks and, you know, play tournaments and we'd play like a high level, come back refreshed and, you know, have time with our family and everything would be fine. But, you know, if literally there's no incentive, then yeah, it's pretty much just going to be completely no reason to have it.
Also, the one last thing is this, and actually, luckily, Valve walked it back, because I'll tell you what, if they'd have actually made that rule about the 8 weeks before you're allowed to like go and start a VR, then it would all have to be, not only in Europe, like some events would have to be in fucking Serbia, because certain people would never get the pass, never get the visa yep. in a million years, and that would actually ruin it, because think about, if you look in the top 10 guys, there's a lot of people from certain countries where they don't have the passport like we do, where you get the waiver, and you can go, and they easily approve you one stamp, like some people were in a tough spot, and so unfortunately, when a lot of your top players come from those countries, the TOs would just pivot. It's like when COVID, everyone just bootcamped in Serbia. People would start doing that again, and that would automatically make it a one region fucking game again. Right.
Yep.
Maui, what is your bad point?
Mine's a team that, you know, upon inception,
heel turn coming.
I wanted them to be okay. good. I thought it was well composed. Okay. I felt like it was a pretty obvious and direct upgrade, but okay. Virtus Pro is just a disaster. Like, this team has just been really bad. I mean, I feel like they've...
You don't have to tell him, but he knows. Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, I mean, if I want to even list the recent match history okay. at Cologne, I mean, they lost to Complexity. I mean, well done.
Well done. It's a good game.
Good job on that victory. But they also lost to Falcons.
Yeah,
and then even at the Blastfall groups, they lost to Liquid, and they lost to Big Clan. Well, I like Big Clan. Okay. Don't get me wrong. I like these teams, but I mean, okay. I don't think Virtus Pro, with the players that are are on their roster have any business losing to the teams that they're losing to. And so when watching the Virtus Pro games, and I'd love to know what Elige thinks about how it feels to play them, because you guys obviously had a really close Dust 2 against them, but then your other maps were a bit more convincing. I just feel like when I watch them, they kind of play this style that feels like they just play so much more in like the not to lose as in the play, as opposed to the play to win. Whereas opposed to like G2, Vitality on Dust 2, they'll always like send people into lower, even like Complexity. You guys will throw Halzerk in lower if he feels like it. I feel like VP, they're just so much less disruptive than other teams. It doesn't feel like they're actually putting always pressure in the rounds. Like they almost want to stage the rounds to me in like a way that's so much more digestible for them, as opposed to playing a way that makes it a little bit more frustrating for opponents. And it's almost like if I had to put myself in the shoes of like, say, a Falcons player, I'm like, oh, this is the kind of Counter-Strike I want to play, because this is like, I get to rely on all my old fundamentals. I get to rely on, oh, we're in a very standard 3v3 post plant. No one's doing anything too crazy right now. And it just doesn't feel like VP have any semblance of that X factor that a lot of teams have now, where you never know against Vitality if Sphinx is going to push you when he's on a 5v3 on CT side. You never know on G2 if anybody is going to do anything crazy at any given time. And VP are just like, they're almost like, it's kind of like the same flaws I see in Falcons, where they just play almost like too by the book, as opposed to in the CS2 that's so dynamic, where people are always going through something, like trying to push a smoke, trying to find like the little edges here and there. I just feel like VP's not doing it as much. And I want to know from Elige, what does it feel like to play them? And more so, how does it feel like? Why are they beatable?
Yeah, I used to always have a really like not fun time playing against VP. When they had Mir on the team, I felt like their style was so difficult to play against. And I'll just separate from like CT and T side from like how I'm feeling about them right now. On their T side, I feel like they're too by the book. Exactly like what you said. When I play them, I feel like I know exactly the flow of like the round, of like how it's feeling, like what could be possible, like what points in the round. And I think that might just because they're maybe too on a leash, which could be similar to like their CT sides, where they don't like have like too much freedom to do, you know, all this different stuff. And because they kind of change their timings where they play a little bit faster, they play like a little bit more in like the 40 seconds of the round, where if you think like VP before with Mir, they were always like waiting like a minute, minute 10 sometimes. And it was so hard to like understand like where they were going. They would hold for times that you'd be like, dude, is this guy really still holding right, like right now? Like Jame is like actually there. And sometimes they do it, like sometimes like here and there. But it's just not that like same scary feeling that we used to feel from them. And I'm not exactly sure why, like they've kind of like completely lost that factor of unpredictability. Cause now I feel like I can read them way easier than other teams. And on their CT side, I think that I see them sometimes, you know, going for some, you know, crazy plays. Like when we played them at, I forget which tournament, but we played them recently on Dust 2 and they just smashed us. Oh, it was the ESWC. They just smashed us. They were being like pretty aggressive, getting in lower, getting in our faces, like throwing HEs. So they have like games where they can like do that. And it might just not be prevalent enough. Like it might be like a game plan thing, or if they're just really feeling it, they might do that. So it's hard to really say exactly, you know, why it's happening. But from my feeling, like their T side is just very readable for me. Just, I think that they need to have like that same scary, slow style that they used to, because they were so good at it. They would work the map in ways where if you tried to find info, you got punished and you lost because you tried to find that info on like just barely the wrong timing, where you don't feel that way anymore.
This is why, I mean, I will say I'm with Maui. This is what's funny is when you saw this team piece by piece built and do the upgrade, and every time on paper it was the upgrade. It was one of the only times ever you built like a super team where like this is almost like one of the, like obviously there's the players in Spirit, but this is almost one of the best players you could make out of Russian players. It looked fucking phenomenal. And the problem is in your brain, this is where in CS we always miss the fact that like the more skill someone has, the typically more star role they play in their team. And when you put them in the super team, not only does it not function, they can't all do that at once, but they completely lost all the charm of VP. Like, it actually turns out VP had to have that, like, weird, janky roster where there was always, like, one and a half. There was always, like, a player who was sacrificial, and there's always one player who just took, like, all the shit roles and took, like, no, had, like, an MP5 after. You know what I mean? Like, it was totally crap so that, like, Jame could have the glass cannon AWP, or you could save the AWP, or you could have the one player Flick would get all the resources in his spot and get, like, covered like he had a bodyguard. You could do all that, but actually that was like, it turns out that was one of those necessity is the mother of invention. That's maybe what allowed that style to function, is you had limited resources and this was the best way to play with them. When you had all these talents, I mean, I'll just say it right now, I refuse to believe electronic fucks with the GM way of playing. Like, the difference is, look, I'm not going to be rude because I don't speak Russian, so I can't know what his psychology is, but he didn't seem to me like a very cerebral player. He's like a player that press W and run in and shoot you. By the way, brilliant for a player like GM. Great, that's the piece that I'm using to run in. He's the tip of the spear. Go in. Someone like Electronic, mate, I don't go in. I'm the secondary... I'm Electronic, bro. I go in and get the two headshots. Like, that's my shit. I'm fucking star player entry. Like, that's different. It's the same reason why when they put Electronic and Axile on the same team, people wanted them, one of them, probably Axile, to just become like fucking... Boomich or something, just running the site like space creators. Like, he's never going to space create like that. He's going to space create or taking his duel and win the duel. Like, that's a totally different style of play, and it's not going to create the same space. So I think also that's all, as well as CS2, I do think they have upped the pace. Bro, even Nico doesn't check every corner anymore. Even he just goes, fuck it, you're just running to take a duel. Even he lets some of them go. Nowadays, I don't think he can do the James style fully, but I also think it doesn't have the pieces now. The pieces probably have their own thoughts, and so I think they've band-aided it. I think after they had all those bad results, they went to the band-aid of, let's just all follow the playbook. Just do. It's almost like what people think Blade does, but actually it gives them more freedom. You just go, do that player. And if it doesn't work, we can't cancel out of it. We just have to do it. We have to hope it works. Because I do think that James style, the reason I used to give him credit as an IGL is, mate, that style is really hard to make work. Like, I think how many times they would plant the bomb on 3 seconds, you'd be like, how did they get in there and know that was possible? But they would just, like, get away with it all the time. That, you have to have the fucking team on a string to do that, mate. You have to know exactly where they're going at what times, what the push-pull is. So, I props to him for pulling it off then. But sadly, either this personnel, it doesn't work with, or that doesn't work in CS2 anymore. And also, if you've read all the interviews the last few months, some of the signs are alarming if you're Jim. Because even he now sort of infers maybe he doesn't have to be the IGL. Electronics here, and somehow the IGL thing just magnetically comes to him. And then even the owner of Spirit did that weird thing where when he signed Electronic and made the super team, he goes, by the way, we will be testing the free market with millions of dollars. What? Why would you say that at the beginning? So that already was like, look, if this doesn't work out, boys, we'll fucking get someone in. So I think when you look at all the talent, you look at how Spirit's doing, a shuffle is inevitable for one of these teams. So I do think, unfortunately, they're in trouble in that sense.
Yeah, I think that they have like a little bit too much of a role overlap potentially. I think that Flit and Electronic play very similar like space taker roles, kind of like what you were saying in terms of like who's going to go in and run in there. I feel like both of them like playing like that slow, methodical, you know, find the gaps and openings, like really similar to like me and Yakindar. Like both of us like playing like that type of style, and that's why it like felt bad when both of us were on the team, or like him and Patsy. Like when you have like two of those space taker type roles, and like someone has to compensate, obviously. And it can just overall feel a lot different, and the macro can start looking differently, because if he's calling something differently, then the whole team's in different situations. I'm not exactly sure like who was like making all those crazy like slow reads and stuff, but you know, I feel like it had to have been something like that, in my opinion.
By the way, one last thing, and this is the ultimate statement. It's a fucking banger. I think Cloud9 without an AWPer was better than this team. Enough said.
Yeah, I mean, they were scary back then. Yeah, they were bad. They had a lot of good stuff going for them.
They could almost beat a lot of good teams.
When I played Cloud9, like, they were scary. Like, Electronic would go for his, like, crazy plays. I remember we'd be playing against each other on Anubis, and I'd do, like, the bridge smoke, and I'd always have to be worried for him just randomly walking through. Right now, when I play versus VP, I never feel like someone's just going to randomly walk through my smoke, trying to, like, take that time and feel that they have a read on me. So I feel like they just don't have, like, that scary, you know, they can do anything type factor.
And everyone knows I always hated on James map pool. Bro, this guy, he doesn't even know there is that box on HLTV with the 3 months. It doesn't matter if his win rate is 20% on Dust 2. He's picking it because he likes Dust 2. Like, he's one of the wackiest IGLs I've ever seen. By the way, I used to like pioneer that on the desk, like checking the stats, figuring out the... Nowadays, most people just do the logical one of like, we are pretty good on that. We won recently. He's off in fucking Cloud Cuckoo Land. He'll pick whatever the fuck he wants, bro. The joke is he'll pick it and then you'll just beat him and then he has to win on your map. It's like, what are we doing here? We've got a super team, bro. There's a lot of IGLs would love that fucking lineup. Okay, I think that's enough VP hate. Obviously Maui did build them up for about 1.5 years, so it's all good. All I'm saying is you built up VP and Norbert's Yakindar.
So good.
VP, Yakindar and Norbert, where are they now? That's your cultural impact. You're a fucking jinx, mate. You cursed all these motherfuckers.
Yeah, true.
That's like when you told me I was the best and I'll get all the events like 3 years ago. How did that work out? Whatever,
everyone's cursed by my touch.
Yeah, right. My bad point is actually going to be another vitality point. It's a really weird one. It's a bit of a micro point, so people have to go and look to see this. But in that final, you saw this actually a bunch of times. You saw it on Nuke. You saw it on, let me think. You definitely saw it on Mirage, which is Sphinx, right? I actually think has some of the craziest rifle mechanics in the world. I actually think he's fucking insanely good with an AK. But one of the weirdest things about his game, bearing in mind he's a really lurky player who plays a little bit passive and he's trying to catch times, he's not actually that insane a fucking clutch player. Like, bro, you'd think a player like that, they're the ones who come in and win like the 1v3 and you're so scared when they arrive at the site. One of the reasons he's not actually that good in clutches is really strange though, which is if you ever watch, cause he's a godlike aimer, he doesn't give himself anything except the headshot to win the clutch. What he'll do is say he goes on Nuke, perfect example, upper site, and there's a guy, this happened, it was JL, I think, inside the hut. If there's a guy and the last guy's inside the hut and the bomb's planted upper, what he'll do is this. He'll slowly check all the corners. Then he'll come back when the bomb is like, beep, 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 beep. And basically you have to kill the guy. He has to peek into you and you have to kill him and then he can defuse, right? And I think my logic goes like this. I think it's cause he's still a little bit inexperienced. It's like he's playing these games like they're FPL games. And in FPL, it's not the major, so of course you just fucking peek into the guy. You peek to see if you can kill him. He peeks to see if he can kill you. You just take the fight. And by the way, he's so sick of aiming, he probably can headshot you. He could probably kill that. But you can actually just beat this guy with your brain. You can just use the time and positioning against him. And I saw him time and time again. He does it on Inferno too. Just not give himself a chance to win the round. And I feel like it's one of those things that I'm bringing it up because I want people to know that even some of the most skilled players in the world don't necessarily have the highest metagame thinking. It's actually why, by the way, conversely, I think someone like Mezzi's fabulous in clutches. He seems to always like have a good feel for where to go when you have to push the opponent, when you have to tap the bomb. Some players, especially when they're very talented, will almost just play like, hey, if you give me the chance, I can win the round. And it's like, some players are really smart, mate. They just won't give you that chance. They'll do that. Like, everyone remembers that old school one where it's actually in fucking... it was when Rain, I think it was maybe at the major or something, it's when Rain against Zeru once did like the more, oh, it was Rain against, it was actually maybe in the major final of PGL Antwerp. It's when Rain was against Zeru, Simple, sorry. It was on the A site of Mirage and he just stayed in that corner in jungle forever and never ever peaked. And Simple was just waiting with the AWP, and if he ever peaks out, by the way, it's a kill, he just won the round in like 1v1. And Rain just did like the most god-tier like mind game of like, what if I just never peek? Even though, by the way, he would just lose the round. I think maybe in the bomb was planted. And it's like one of those ones where you have to understand the veterans, especially in a stage match, they can just win just by forcing you to waste all your chances. So what do people think? It's more of an abstract point than just about Sphinx necessarily.
Maybe before even Elige goes in on this, I think one example of Sphinx in a late round where he messed up was when, was it JL was defusing on the B side of Mirage, and then Sphinx, instead of playing the time at all, just
run and jumped out or something. Yeah.
That was like one of those high pressure moments where it's like, yeah, can I empathize with him? Yes, but would you hope that, would I expect like anybody that's from like the all time great Astralis roster would have counted to two in their head before they did that? Yeah. You know, it's one of those things. I feel like with Sphinx, I mean, you know, his raw aim is really good. But one thing that I also always noted is that if he ever found himself kind of like in a single piece of cover, like the skill set to be a good aimer in like a raw fight when he's swinging is different than the skill set that you need to play around a single piece of cover, throw out that one shoulder to bait out a peek to freeze the oncoming T, and then just like then go for the wide swing when you know that they're running at you. Like, I don't always think that Sphinx has the best option choice when it's like those little like fine-tuned sort of ideas. Basically, like, he's not always good if he has to anchor. That's kind of what I mean. Like, if he's stuck behind a bomb, like behind a single piece of cover, and he has to kill a bunch of people running at him, then I don't necessarily think Sphinx is like the best at it, where it's like Yimpat always just shows like a little bit of his body that's like just all he needs to in order to isolate duels a lot more effectively than someone like Sphinx. But I mean, that's my take on that. I don't know what Elige thinks of Sphinx.
Yeah, honestly, it's kind of hard because I haven't really like noticed this or something. So I kind of would just be like generally saying,
yeah,
I think that it's kind of easier for passive players. And Sphinx, I would actually think that he's more of like an aggressive like lurker a lot of times. I remember when he first joined Vitality, he was being super passive. And that's when like he didn't have like the best stats and he wasn't performing well in the games. And that's when he was kind of saying that like he was being a little bit passive, and when he can go for more of like his aggro lurks and find like the timings, that's when he feels more comfortable. I feel like that's what he wants, to like find people on timings and use his like his skill is probably what it is. And that's something that like I think a lot of aggressive riflers that have really good mechanics and really good aim, they want to like leverage that fact. Whereas like the passive players, they feel very comfortable because they're used to playing like these slow rounds and they're in them like every single round where they just feel like at home. Like I'm thinking of like Naf, Zipnix, Jimfat, like you're saying. I feel like those type of like archetypes of players naturally succeed very well in those rounds because yeah, half the time if you do just play the clock, then you're just gonna win the round because if I'm thinking of really good clutchers on like the opposite side where you're a CT and you have to like get into the bomb, like Hiko was really good at those
Oh,
rounds.
sure.
And I remember watching Hiko on
Oh,
a
he'd go
lot of
slow
those
as fuck,
clutches.
wouldn't he?
He just waits. He just waits for someone to peek him. So if Hiko's in a clutch against Sphinx and like he's doing like these peeks like you're saying, then yeah, he would probably like lose most of the time unless he just, bonks him in the head like with the headshot. So I think it's kind of like an archetype of like how people like to play, and it's something that it takes a while to get out. Even for myself, I think most of the times when I played a clutch and I'd be like watching Naf play one, I'd be like, geez, I wouldn't have played it like that at all. And it's just, the culmination of seeing how somebody else that's way more passive than you, for example, and like wants to play like the clock, how they would do things and slowly changing your decision making is how that's gonna change.
The other thing is, as well, if you want to do that really slow style, it's mega, like Rops and people do it, but you have to be so good at your feel. You have to basically psychically know where he is. Like, I once heard a story, I think it was Jumpy told me this when he was coaching Flusher, that they once watched him play around, and it's like that. He just like went really slowly, and at the end checked one spot, and the guy was there and he killed him. And everyone was like, what the fuck? And he was like, I knew he was there, or whatever, which is like, obviously, write the jokes, but that's what we all love about Flusher. He was just a fucking genius, wasn't he? So all I'm saying, look, these are fine margins. Spinks is probably at the fifth best player in the world, but these are the areas where he's not number one. Because by the way, I actually think, again, you think of people like Nico, Prime Config, these guys, Twists, they have the mechanics, they could just be the best player in the world. So I'm always going to look at these guys and wonder, what is the last bit they need to do to complete the game, as it were. Right, let's
Yeah,
go on
makes
to the
sense.
ugly. Right, Elise, this is, I love this one, so come on, hit me with it. What's the ugly one? This is a boomer take, but I love it. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, for me, this is the worst map pool of all time.
All
And
time.
not only is it the worst, but like we need it before the major. Like I don't want to do this
All
thing where like
right.
where we wait for the major and we're all looking at the statistics and we're like, Vertigo has only been picked two
There
times
you
in like the
go.
last 3 months. And it's like, dude, like can we just like skip to the good part type of thing? Like I just want to like skip to that part where we have a better map pool. Like there's so many maps that just don't feel good. And I can just think of so many other times where it was just way more enjoyable to play, way more enjoyable to watch. And yeah, I just don't want to like wait
Give us
this
some
long. I
maps
know
you
that we're
miss.
gonna.
What are maps you miss from the pool that you enjoyed in CS?
I mean, I'm kind of like a train hater, but if I'm looking at the pool right now, I would enjoy train.
That says a
I think
lot.
that we have too many. Yeah, I think we have too many T-sided maps is what I think it boils down to. I think that it's more enjoyable to like watch and play CT-sided maps more often than not. And when you have so many maps that are leaning like heavily T-side or just even a little bit, it just feels a little bit lopsided. And once you removed Overpass from the map pool, that was kind of like the final frontier. Like, what are we going to remove Nuke next and bring in Cache? It's like how much further are we going to bring this, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I was gonna make a point about just Vertigo itself, but I feel yeah, I mean the balance of the maps right now, I just feel like I mean T-sided, I almost just say like aimer maps. I mean, I feel like Ancient, Vertigo, Dust2, Mirage, they can feel very brawly. Even Inferno in a respect can actually be very brawly. It's a little
And
bit more
Anubis,
cerebral.
honestly. Anubis as well. Mega T-sided.
I mean, I don't even know, like beyond Nuke, I don't really see a single map where I'm like the more tactical, well thought out, macro decision making team is gonna win every
By the
single
way,
time
even
here.
Nuke isn't the old archetype. It's not the 10-2 half of it. No, it's like you have like fucking 7-5 halves all the time.
For sure. So I agree with that. I mean, I wanted to know because I mean, okay, first I'll address your point, but then I have a question. And I feel like no, the map pool right now with like I just think if you have a map pool with Dust2, Mirage, Ancient, and even kind of Anubis to an extent now, like or even Vertigo, I guess. I just need one more that's just like it really rewards the tactical teams. And there was this Twitter account recently that posted all of the longest map LAN win streaks across different maps. And I think like it showed like the 16 longest win streaks, and I think
5 out of the 16 were on Nuke. 4 out of 16 were on Train. And like that in itself, like 9 out of the 16 on what I consider the most tactical maps, are it just kind of shows that if you know what you're doing on that map, even if your players are on an off day, you still have a great chance to win because you're going to outplay your opponents. And you look at that win streak stuff, and I think there's only a single Dust 2, but it was like, this was NIP in 2012. So it was they were beating they had 4 of the 16.
They never used to lose a map, exactly.
Yeah, so like that, to me, that's an outlier. Yeah, course, that one doesn't really count. Because nobody today, I don't think anybody today is going to have a Dust 2 win streak that's above 10, you know? Like, it was very impressive that Na'Vi held on to that 11-whip win Mirage win streak. And I do think that they played it in an incredibly tactical way. A lot of great strategies, a lot of great misdirection and layering. And their players were very adept in the Blade Alexei system. But it's just so unlikely. Like, it's just so unlikely to have those kind of win streaks, because I'm almost surprised that they didn't just catch, like, a Nico-level player on a good day for Nico, and he just runs out mid and kills you 6 times in a row. And you're just like, okay, well, we did what we could on our T side, but our CT side got shut down because we just got outshot.
Sure. No, I totally agree with this point. I actually do think, I also made a similar one before. It's not even just bad. I think it is the worst one ever. Because the problem was, when they removed Overpass, that was just that's the straw that broke the camel's back. Like, if you notice, by the way, there's another reason why VP was sucked. That was one of their fucking best maps. Like, what you basically did is you took, like, one of the more tactical maps, one of the maps where the CTs have all these abilities to make. Remember, the CT has the super fast rotation, but there's a giant map. So it's like, actually, you allow the CTs to have so many different styles of play. Do they play aggressively on the A site? Do they just, like, group up on the B site and do boosts? There's so many different things you can do. You can creak through the middle area. The Ts have to always be controlling information. That's not, Vertigo is not like that. It's fucking, we all know it's like bomb site hold simulator. It's ridiculous. It should just be, they should literally remove Vertigo and it should just be a fucking feature on Refrag. That's all Vertigo is good for. Get it out the fucking pool. Because I look, right, here's the thing. I can't stand that people do, like, Nico forever, because he's just salty that his team was never going on the map. He's always like, remove Overpass. I'm like, Vertigo's in the pool. And then some people are like, Inferno's boring. Vertigo. And then they're like, I think Mirage has played out. Vertigo. Can't we just hold in one voice, rise up and say, please remove Vertigo. It sucks. So I think that map has never been good. I actually think, by the way, this is where I do blame Spirit and FaZe. By making that exciting game at the Major, you probably let some fucking Valve dev watch that and think that map's sick. Like, oh my God, it was incredible. What a great... That was like one of the only good games ever on that map. And it was because both teams suck on it, so they couldn't do any tactics. They were just running up in the fucking site. That map fucking blows. It has almost no legendary games on it. Whereas, you know what? I used to be a hater of some of the newer maps. You know what? Ancient can stay, mate. It's actually good at this point in time. That's a map with, like, actually tactics play. You can frag still. It's got all sorts of different interesting push-pull dynamics on T side. You know what? I also thought Anubis looked a bit one-dimensional. It's not bad. It's at least got like a different, it's a totally unique map compared to some of the others. It's got different things to play with. A lot of the fights are quite different. So I don't even mind what comes back, bro. Train's an obvious one because it would solve kind of some of these issues. But again, it depends what we're doing. Like, here's what's funny. In this world, even though everyone would cry, Cobblestone could be hella CT-sided. And you're all going to go, but it was played out in 2017. You know, it's like fucking 2024 now with different smokes, totally different game, a way more powerful T-side. TET economy is way more in danger. Bro, and the Tech-9's mega now. You have MP, everyone uses SMGs. Bro, I think it would be, let's play it. Let's play it and tweak it. But then if it's not good, can't we just rework it and bring it out? Like, they're the sort of maps that I think, again, would restore some order. Because it's pretty obvious, Maui, when you rinse that off, as to why those are the maps with the long streaks. Meanwhile, we all know you don't get a long streak on fucking typically Inferno, obviously on Dust 2, because these are T-sided maps, so it's really hard to win T-side consistently with like 10 rounds. All the CT's are maps, it's people just fragging out. They have a good teamwork. You just shoot people when they come on the screen. Of course, those are the map win streaks. So we want to balance it out a bit. You always want the pool to be, basically, so that, like, you don't just want T-side teams to win, you want CT teams to win as well. But if you have it nice and balanced, then just whoever's better on each is the one that wins the tournament, innit?
Yeah, there was only one streak also for Cash, and it was like the Xantara's space soldiers.
Fucking hell,
Just because he was just...
Yeah, it's just Xantara's, isn't it? It's just him fucking Ferrari peeking motherfuckers. That's not a feature of the map.
When Kallax is in insane form at that time too, or whatever.
Oh, and by the way, that's another thing like that SnapTap. I always told Scream, the Belgian one, back in the day, you are a genius for bringing out that mouse that was designed by you. Because obviously the highlight movie was just you headshotting everyone. Like, obviously every noob's going to buy it. How has no one thought to to do some feature like that with Zantares. Bro, every little kid would be like, oh, now I can do it. It's like, you would not, you won't be able to, by the way. He's just like an aimbot, but yeah, that he should be in the face of some sort of a mouse or snap tap shit, like, you know, Zantac or whatever, you know. Fucking, there you go. It's not a bad name, actually. So I'll write that down. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. I wanted to know, though, with Elysian, I mean, I think a lot of us really dislike Vertigo. You guys pick it, though, and you're obviously good at it. But like, with the new update, like, to the elevator thing, I was going to bring this up. I didn't want to have overlapping points with you. Or, I mean, I didn't know what your point was or anything like that, but I knew that it was, or Thorin said it was kind of overlapping. And so I wanted your opinion, though, on the latest change to it, where they just open up the elevator, because it just feels like we're just seeing way more B, and that's basically like they changed the map to almost just like funnel people to the other side of the map,
right?
As opposed to creating a new interaction that's actually beneficial, like the little, you know, the rafters on the side, and then the elevator, the wall opening up, and everything like that. What are your thoughts on it?
I think that it's just, I don't know. There's just so much that's wrong with it, I think. Just playing like the rounds out, I feel like a lot of the time, if you go B and like the CTs, they just fall back after like the first like 20-30 seconds, then you have like two or three CTs that are like near elevator, like super quick rotates, able to throw a billion flashes over B. So just going B is just really hard. Going mid is also like very like hard, because, you know, everyone's like already right there. And then at A, there's just so many openings that like all these pushes are possible. And this even sounds like I'm saying that like the T side is hard, but it's not, because there's like so much stuff like the CT has to worry about. They're kind of like funneled into like playing for like, you either super aggress like towards like the A round. Honestly, it's been like the same way for a while, where you have to just choose if you're going to like repush A, and if you happen to repush A, then they're just like all B, and the rotations are just not very, they're just very short. And the rounds just honestly just don't play out like that well. Like, there's not like that push and pull dynamic that you have on the other maps, where you're feeling like you have good games. It just feels very gambly, where you kind of just choose like a strat and it can just work out. I don't even know how to describe it. I feel like it doesn't play out like any of the other maps at all.
The mid-rounding for Vertigo, like, whereas on other maps like Mirage, you have a choice because you're in the middle of the map. Like, okay, wait, we spotted one guy throwing a flash over from B. We killed a guy on Cat. We know that they probably are playing, like, a 3A setup or something like that. It's like Vertigo's mid-rounding is just, like, do we stay silent and hold? Do we stay silent, then walk up A? Or do we stay silent, then we walk up B with, like, a pop or something like that? And it's, like, it just seems so much more lucky. I'm sure IGLs at the highest level have some kind of like checklist they go through that's saying this is why we're gonna go A, or this is why we're gonna go B. But I've seen some where it's like, you know, when Eternal Fire were really good at it, it just felt like they paused and then they would just choose randomly B or A to walk to, and then it was like, okay, Xantaras killed the first guy anyway, so it didn't matter.
Yeah, without giving away like too much of like our thought process on it, I think, yeah, like you're right, Eternal Fire, they even still play like that right now. Like when we last played them, they were playing exactly like that. They pretty much throw nades at A, and then they would just have like those really awkward timings where they're just walking up at like some point after the nades are gone. And the A ramp is so difficult because all of the angles are T-sided. Like pretty much every single one is T-sided. So the only way that you can play for ramp is if you're using all of your utility and your nades. So kind of both sides know like what's going on like with the other one, and you're kind of like trying to find like ways to, you know, catch them off guard. Like that's kind of like what it feels like. It's like try to catch your opponent like slightly off guard when they're not like using their util type of simulator. I don't know. It just feels not as clean CS as like the other maps. And if you watch like the Heroic Game versus us at Blast, you can see like what I'm talking about in terms of like, if you don't just like go A and you push the CTs back, then if you actually try going B, since the rotations are so fast and the CTs aren't actually forced into playing on the site or the ramp, kind of like how they were before, now they can just kind of play an elevator and just spam flashes over B. And it's very hard to, I don't know. It just, the CS just doesn't feel like as clean as the other maps. And even though we are like really good at it, it's honestly not very enjoyable to play, because I feel like a lot of the rounds can come just down to chance way more than other maps.
By the way, it's incredibly telling when people who are good on the map and use it are like, actually, you can just remove that one. Like, normally they fight to the death. Also, a more important two reasons as to why they need to remove Vertigo. Because one, Liege would have won Starlight of Berlin Major if there wasn't Vertigo. And two, I wouldn't have been wrong. And that's most important of all in many ways. So,
okay, we were good on that map. They came in good after the player break. Acting as if like we're the dumb ones for like that. I'm just like, guys, we were good at this map too, but they just came in with a really good game plan. Zoned us.
True. Okay, Maui, what is your ugly point?
Mine is it's kind of like the recency bias I've seen because of Cologne and how the entire narrative is shifting away from Donk. And I'm talking about the who's gonna win number one this year, because it was in some ways a three-horse race between Donk, Monacy, and Zywoo. But now it feels like, I mean, the conversation's open, but I just want to give a very strong argument for Donk right now, because he's my number one of the year. And I feel like the conversation's getting a little bit muddied, because I feel like people are forgetting how incredibly hard it is as an aggressive first in rifler to put up the numbers that Donk is putting up. And for all like the reasons that like rating is bad are mostly due to the fact that survival, it helps your rating so much. Like if you save and get a kill, you get good rating. And as opposed to if you're Donk and you get two entries, but you die, it's bad. And it's almost like getting, I'm not exactly sure how it's calculated, but it's like, you know, if Zywoo saves, but he gets a kill versus Donk gets two, but dies, it's almost like an equal thing on rating, which is kind of stupid. And the thing is, like, you look at the numbers and Donk and Zywoo for the year on like LAN top 20, they have the exact same rating, but Donk has like five higher ADR, he has a higher KPR on top of that, but he just dies more because he just keeps running in as his team wants him to do. And I feel like the conversation is now kind of shifting because, and also like, I just want to remind everybody, we haven't had a rifler number one since 2017 who was a last in, very baity, entire system designed for him, Cold Zera. The last time we even had a remotely aggressive rifler at number one was Olaf Meister, even before that. And I feel like people are just kind of like looking purely at rating and saying like, nope, they got the tied rating, like the conversation's on. It's like, are we forgetting how different their role is and how Donk is still, despite a bad Cologne, a transcendent player for being able to put up those numbers with actually being an aggressive rifler? Like, Nico's been trying for a couple years here. Alige is trying all the time to do this as an aggressive rifler. Like, I feel like there needs to be more aggro rifler sympathy from the fans and from people that are putting these arguments together, because this is a role that is notoriously, I just say it's flat out the hardest role to be consistent on. And for some reason, it's like, oh, the rating's the same, the conversation's on. It's like, it's to me, it's not. To me, Donk's still firmly in the lead.
Yeah, I mean, I'm mega biased. So, I mean, I definitely agree with you. I mean, I think that Operas just farm the rankings and like the rating, like you're saying, just because it's just naturally better for them. But it is so hard, like you're saying, to do what he's doing. And it's not even just that he's an aggressive rifler. He's like actually an entry. Like when people say entry, they're like referring to people that like are getting openings, and that's different. Like I would say that I'm not as much of an entry as Donk is, because Donk, when they are going for, you know, execute strats where they're like starting off the round, like we kind of changed my role to be more like that, but I haven't always been like that. And it's way harder to be the entry when like time comes, like in all parts of the round, where, you know, if you're comparing Donk to like me or Electronic, we like being more of like space takers. Like there's stuff that's happening on part of the map. We're getting like resources in the beginning of the round to, you know, feel out what's going on, you know, flash here, flash there. We're trying to get like an opening and get ourselves set up and get into like a good mid round with our team. But on Spirit, Donk is completely like with the team the entire way through. They don't want him lurking. Like on Ancient, for example, he plays like the elbow, like the mid brawler guy. And when it's time to like throw mid nades and try to like bait that like they're gonna go for mid, they just have Donk somewhere else. Chopper is the one that's throwing those nades. They want to make sure that he's in like the brunt of like the execute. And the hardest part about being the entry, which is why it sucks so much for me when I first like got into like the pro scene in 2015, if you're the entry and your team sucks, you're just going to be the entry death every round. Like, they're not blind. You're opt. Like, you're just dead instantly. And that can happen so much. The fact that Donk is, like, running up there and he's not just insta-dying to the op and just, like, not just being, like, the first, like, entry death, that's really, really hard. And I feel like unless you played that role, like, you don't understand, like, how hard that is. Because I know how hard it is. I was getting, like, 16-2'd by, like, the best teams in the world just entering, just being the guy jumping out, dying. Donk is doing that. He's running out there in his first year. Well, I don't know if you want to call it like last year's first year, the second year of like Pro CS, where he's just running in with the pack and just fragging out. That's really difficult.
By the way, I'll give an analogy because I agree. The weirdest thing about the interpretation of that Reddit thread, Maui, where it was all the players listed by rating, is the logic went, well, now that Ziwu has made the same rating as him, Ziwu's number one. It's like, but if you actually understand the roles, that is more impressive for Donk. What are you talking about? Like, Ziwu is either an AWPer or a mid-round fucking rifler who doesn't even go in first. So in that scenario, it's way harder to do what Donk's doing. Like, I don't think people realize how insane that is. And then also, right, you actually saw in that terrible game against G2 what it's like for Spirit when Donk doesn't do that. People like Magix and Chopper are in hell, bro. They're just getting chewed up all over the place. No wonder Zontix looked like he, if he wasn't getting kicked off the team, he wanted to fucking just leave and exit the earth, like, and be swallowed up. Like, that was hell for those guys. Like, they all suddenly found the game twice as hard, it felt like, because the craziest thing about Donk is it's no exaggeration. He doesn't just run in and win his duel, right? Obviously, no one can ever actually, as an entry, kill both people each time. Let's say he kills the first one and then, like, dinks or shoots the other guy. Like, can you imagine how much easier it is for the fucker with the MP9 behind him, for Shiro to re-peek into that? It's a kill every time. It's basically like one bullet and you get the kill. So he's making also kills that don't actually come onto his fucking scoreboard for his teammates. And I've got a stat for you here, as if to show how even rating can be actually a little bit deceiving. So I always say my king stat is kills per round, because it's the only one you can't fake. If you're at tier one, you can do all sorts with the rating. I actually think you can see people like Frozen. Sometimes they don't have to have the craziest kills because they play a little bit baity. They serve a little bit. They're at the end. They're not always the one who has to take the duel. The reason why the KPR is bonkers is this guy has played, they've listed on here 10 tournaments. Like, obviously, one was playing for Katowice with three maps, and one is like the first Swiss of the major, right? Of the 10 tournaments he's played in 6 of the 10, he has above a 0.88 kills per round, and he is going in first or second. That is impossible. Like, he is doing for the rifle what Simple did with the AWP. Like, are you, because he's had like, remember, he's had like two whole tournaments. The Betboom where he came second, he had over a kill per round. With the rifle. Remember, we've all just complained, like Maui's saying, for the last 6-7 years, it's just AWPers just taking their peaks and re-peaking. They get all the kills, right? Now, what you all want, the rifle god has come, and we're not even acknowledging it. We're actually just going, yeah, but Zimu just won the tournament, so it's obviously him, isn't it? I actually think that whole discussion is so fugazi, because people are just prisoners in the moment. Remember, right, we have a couple of smaller, like, we have the Pro League, we have the IM Rio, but we have the Major as well, right? I actually think number one is going to be, unless you do what we did, you try and do a stylistic eye test breakdown, which is harder, and judge the roles. If you want to go off stats and you want to go off MVPs and stuff, then it's not going to be the players that decide this number one. This isn't Simple versus Ziwu. This is just going to be whose team ends up winning the Shanghai Major and wins more of the tournaments. Yeah. Like, spoiler, if Monacy's G2 really frags out and they go, he's going to be number one, it won't matter why he's number one or why we all say that. Meanwhile, if Ziwu, if they win all the rest, if they win the Major, if they're in all the finals, he gets it, then he's going to win, isn't he? But that won't just be him doing it. Like, we're acting like it's going to be who's better as a player. I actually think the coolest thing about this race is all three have very distinct styles. You have Donk with this bonkers style of rifling. Monacy's sort of like the all-around AWPer who actually plays simple-esque and has super ego players but wins clutches. And then Ziwu is like transitioning between like the dominant CT AWP sides on certain maps where he's the old Ziwu. And then on T sides, he actually is like one of the best riflers and he's flowing in the mid-rounds. Like, I actually think what's coolest is this is actually what you want in the game, boys. Even though I'm obviously like an old school guy who just wants Simple to come back and be the king, because whatever, comfort food, innit? But I actually think it's beautiful right now. It's actually one of the best eras ever to watch these guys all battling it out. And the difference is they could all be number one, and they would all deservedly be number one. Let's just say that. Even if you think it's Ziwu Nardo, he would deserve to be number one. They're all fucking sick players. They're really good.
Yeah, it's so hard because I think a lot of it, like you said, just comes down to who has the better team. Because if, like you saw, if you get 13-1, 13-2'd, your rating is going to be crap. Yes. Like, there's just no way around it. Like, sometimes I think people don't realize that. It's like, oh, look at this guy. He has such bad rating compared to this other one. Even though, like, if you watch both of them, you know that they're both really similar in skill. They're both really good. But, yeah, his team, he just got 13-1, 13-2, so his stats are just worse. So I think that's just natural. And, yeah, I think the race is so close. For me, it's definitely between Donk and Monacy right now. But I mean, what Donk did in the first half of the year is just bonkers.
Yes. By the way, I even think I always have this line I say, Leech, where I say in sports, because I follow basketball, Michael Jordan sadly ruined the game for everyone because now every star has to do what he did. Never lose, always be in the finals, always be the leading scorer, always be the MVP. And it's like, that's not normal. Everyone else didn't do that in history. Simple ruined it. Yep. Like, if everyone remembers that goat year where Simple had, and famously there was that Dream Act Marseille where he got the MVP even though Astralis won, right? The reason he got the MVP, guys, is there's a map in that final where Astralis wins like 16-4 or something and he goes like 24-6. Like, no human can ever do that. Like, if that makes you think that's what star players should do, he has broken your brain. And don't worry, he broke a lot of people's brains, as we talked about earlier in the conversation. So, okay, the last point is going to be my ugly point. And it's going to be obviously that complexity is wasting Elysia's... Oh, shit, those are the notes for last episode. apologies to everyone. Listen, sorry to Halzerk, Halzerk, whatever you call fucking Hall Monitor. All that matters is you get a pass from me. So, no, the real ugly point... That wasn't bad. Actually, someone marked that. That was pretty good. Now, I'll reuse that on a desk sometime. The real ugly point is this, right? I am one of those people where, you know that classic poster? It's from the old school. It's the old school flying saucer, and it says, I want to believe. Everyone's seen it. It's like iconic from like the 60s or something, you know. That's me. The second FaZe Clan shows any life. They could just be dormant. So we're going to have to turn off the Kerrigan machine now. If I see even like a finger twitch or like that little thing, dude, I'm like, they're alive in there. Get him in here. Because here's the thing. The way they were playing before that Saw game, mate, I was ready to like, you know, they might fuck around and win this tournament. You know what? Maybe hot take is they win the major. I could double down. No one will take that tip. But the problem is, the reason it's an ugly is I actually do think this tournament made FaZe Clan look like they're back, especially their T side. It looked way fucking better. Rops looked way better, so they wasn't so baity. The amount of trades they were able to do getting sites was mega. Suddenly, all the map pool, which looked shit on the numbers, they had like, I think that's something meant like a 20% win rate on Mirage or something insane or Inferno. One of these maps, they had a super low win rate. It didn't matter. Well, when they played this way, they were getting the T-sides, they were winning T-sides. They almost beat Vitality, the team that won the fucking tournament. They were one of the teams that played them closest. Obviously, I have to put it in ugly because they went on stage and played five Portuguese guys who may as well be from the fucking Make-A-Wish Foundation. Like, I just want to play on stage at Cologne. It's never going to happen again, so enjoy it. And that, you know, brilliant. Yeah, awesome. You know, Materis, yeah, okay, there's the gold watch. Do you enjoy that one? If I get the fuck out. Right, obviously, that's never going to happen again, but they lost to him. And the worst thing is, in map one, it's FaZe that looked like the noobs. They were the ones like, pepper sweat, oh God. And meanwhile, Saw was eating them up. They were getting chewed up by you jerks. Mate, how can that... That's how you know, mate, that you aren't sick enough yet. If you were actually a top 20 player, you jerks would become like a cool name. And so it just sounds weird at the moment. You know what I mean? You jerks. Like, what's that? Hey, you jerks. Like, what's this fucking The Simpsons or something? So I have to caveat. I would have made it my good point that FaZe is back and the T side's back. Obviously, I'm gonna temper it a little bit by putting it as ugly because I can't be sure. But I want to know what you guys think, because I have to say, not only was the series against Vitality great, the series against Liquid was the lower bracket was obviously a banger one. I do think this, even the loss to Saw, they made it close at the end. One of the reasons I actually love them being in the scene is I love having that team that always tests you in the big match. They don't go down easy. They can do the comeback. They have the clutch factor. You know, in their team, by the way, it's not going to be one guy carrying. Someone else is going to have a bit rain, suddenly having a big T half. Oh my God, Carrigan's winning rounds at the end of a game. They're always one of the most box office entertaining teams. They're one of my favorites to watch. So I don't know. You guys tell me if I'm tripping. Are they back? Is it too soon? What are we doing here?
What do you think, Mary?
They're like... kind of bad. I mean, I don't like the thing with FaZe is I always call them the great procrastinators, because it's just, I also just don't know where their motivation is at. Like, something, for whatever reason, it's always like,
a smoldering ember and what's going to pour the gas on it for them. And it seems like sometimes if they're down and they just, for whatever reason, think they can do it, then for like they can just all lock in. Like they're like the definite, I don't even know what's going on with their mindset or anything like that. Because like game to game, you know, they can.
Oh, they are that meme of the guy playing Xbox who sat up and then when he, like, you know, then he has to beat his own brother. It's like he they do that. Like, there's a bit of that.
Exactly.
Going on,
they have to lock in. Okay. Thing is, they play to the level of their opponents in every single game, or they actually do what they shouldn't do, and they play to the level that they think their opponents are at, which is what they did to Saw, and that's why they got fucked by them.
Okay.
Just kidding. No, that's, I mean, I really honestly, like, the problem with FaZe that I have, actually, is that tournament to tournament, it just feels like a different player sort of falls off for them. This tournament for me, it was Brokey. Rops had a hard couple months. Rain just doesn't seem to get it in order all the time. Like big stages, Rain seems to do well, but like if it's a studio environment, I feel like Rain is kind of like whatever. And actually, if you look at it, Rain in online for the last like 5 years has had a sub 1.0 kill death ratio. He doesn't seem to care at all when he's playing online matches at all. And
he must be like smoking a cigarette, pushing that like one hand. Like, oh, dude, shit, I missed. Sorry.
In like 2020. He was drinking out of a wine glass during a match. I love it. Yeah, I don't think it was wine, but I remember that was happening. And I was like, is he drinking wine during this event? Like, I think it was a Blast event online or something. Yeah, no, he's all over the place. And I don't know what it is, but it's like different levels of motivation. The thing that I cited before, and I don't know if it's true right now, is that I remember watching tournaments with FaZe where they were, when I'm like the most in tune with the meta, sometimes I would see FaZe games and it's like, oh, they're throwing the smoke that lands 1.5 seconds slower than everybody else's smoke right now because they didn't update their playbook. And I'm just kind of like, they clearly just didn't practice this much going into this tournament, or they didn't update their own strat book. So I don't know if that was the case for Cologne. I didn't dive into the demos as closely this time as I have for other ones. But no, with CT sides, if they just stick to the fundamentals, if the players all know what they're supposed to do round to round, they're one of the teams that can just lock in the hardest. And it's weirdly reductive because it's like, I don't know why. It just feels like with FaZe versus other teams, it's like a narrative thing versus when I watch other teams, I'm like, oh, okay, these are their flaws on their T side. They don't do this with VP, I can say it's like, okay, they don't have that like X factor potential on the T side. They're not random. But like with FaZe, it's like, are you guys going to try today, or are you just going to sit back in your chairs today?
I feel like FaZe is such like a hard team, like you guys are saying, because like whenever I get matched up against them in tournaments, even for like the last like 2 years, they've always been so hard to deal with. But more recently, like you're saying, I think that it's hard to even pinpoint what the issue is that prevents them from being like that god team that just is winning like they were at like the beginning of CS2. From watching like their comms from the uncut comms video, I felt like the main thing that I thought of was I was surprised that they were so on the fly with everything.
Yeah.
I felt like everything was very on the fly, and I don't know. I think that's how it is like all the time. Obviously, it's hard for me to criticize because, you know, they obviously have been playing better than my team for a while, but I feel like if you have to rely on things being on the fly and like how you're feeling, like throughout the rounds, like to like have like the perfect mid round, have like the perfect read, I think it's just harder to be consistent if like someone's like having an off day or they're just not like, you know, if they're just not feeling it, it's just a little bit harder. But I mean, that's obviously just like that one half and like a couple rounds of tea that we saw, but that was just like my initial vibe. And that could be it, but it's hard to really extrapolate much from it because I don't even know. Like you said, there's just so many different things that go wrong, like from tournament to tournament, of why they can't like secure the trophy.
By the way, on the Rain topic, as if this motherfucker couldn't get any more mysterious and swagged out and the bad boy, he may as well wear a leather jacket while he plays. In that IGL round table, when Carrigan said, this is so insane when you consider that guy was the MVP of a major 2 years ago, he said there is no playbook for Rain. He just does whatever he wants. Like, what? Bro, it's 2024. He sometimes like the entry. Like, what are we talking about? But listen, if you can do it and you can do it on stage, I guess, you know, I guess he has the special fucking dispensation he's just allowed to, right? Fucking hell, that's crazy.
I'm glad you guys brought those up because now I'm remembering it all. Like the comms video with FaZe, like every single round they're like, I'm gonna do this. Okay, I'm gonna do this.
It's always people making a play. Yeah.
It's like when I was watching comms videos back for I think 2015, they released the Fnatic comms at like an ESL Pro League. How it felt like everything they were doing was just on the fly, and it's like, hey, I'm gonna go for a pick. Yo, boost me. Okay, whatever. And it's like, I feel like so many teams, and I'm sure. At least you could say like more on this. Like, I feel like you just shorten things, like have some code words for like, this is the starter we're going to run this round. This is the finisher we want to run this round. This is like, we're going to throw X flash, whatever. But they're just like, I got a spawn. I'm going to go underpass. And the guy's like, okay, I'll help you out this round. It's like, don't you have like, hey, we have this formate. Like, we're going to do the double underpass push. Or like, it didn't even come from Kerrigan. It was just like individuals all calling their own numbers and feeling it in the moment. And yeah, that's just going to be way more inconsistent.
Yeah, I mean, my team has like a lot more code words. And that's like how I've always been. People have always like criticized me in terms of like, oh, Leash, he has like this specific thing. The way that he likes playing is strategic. Like, no, I just like when everything's like a little bit more organized and I could say things like simply. And that's one of the big things that I brought to Complexity is just like a naming scheme where we could just easily be like, okay, this is our star. This is how we're going to like flow through the rounds. And everyone's like on the same page. But when you are like calling like that and on Mirage, like to be fair, usually the people that are playing like towards mid are going to be the ones that are more vocal. That's why like Kerrigan, like the only things he can really say was, you know, how he's going to start at B, pretty much. Like, the main things that are going to be happening are, like, are you going to jump underpass? How are you going to fight mid? And, yeah, if you're really feeling it and everyone's having a good day, then you can piggyback off that and be like, okay, I'm going to do this for you and I'm going to do that. And then the guy that's A is like, okay, you guys are doing that. I'm going to do this off on top of that. And later I can, like, repush ramp. So it kind of requires everyone to, like, be in that mode. And that's kind of, like, why I like having things a lot more structured. So if you don't have to rely on that all the time. So it's hard to say, but I thought that it was it was fun to watch. I definitely enjoyed watching the game, especially.
I also think that style is the reason why people don't just say Kerrigan has sick play. They say he's the GOAT IGL because the other thing is when that works, it's obviously going to be hard to be more consistent. You're not doing set things. You don't have that fucking blade playbook. Like refer to page 37, item 4, clause C. It will be the upper version of like, we're not doing that. So because he's calling certain things off feel and things he's noticed, it's got to be so hard to anti. I bet the amount of times you do the prep and you think, what was the fucking point of that? You never did any of that shit.
Yeah, I think it's also like player based too, because like you're saying, if Rain has always been like that, I mean, I know players that have been like that. Like Stewie is like super like sure. Intuitive based. Naf is really like that, and it also just depends on like the role that they play like within the team. Where like can they actually be like that type of intuition based style? And it works really nice when like everyone's like feeling it. But yeah, I think that it's just a little bit harder when it's not going that way.